reduced by half. Which
Piazza
is still
on sale, or is that another loan?
Yeah, well,
my boy Luke.
he went on loan, signed a new contract, but then said, "My Chelsea career is over because I can't stop doing this." Yeah,
that was when he came.
Looking forward to seeing the Chelsea team next season, because, like you say, I'm not quite so convinced that a lot of these young prospects you're bringing through are going to be the staple of your team going
like
forward.
Yeah, but
if here's Lambard, if Lambard stays,
the good comes out, the argument will be you didn't have a choice.
That will be the new thing. Yeah, yeah, you only did it because you didn't have a choice. Yeah, exactly. But if you think about it,
so if you do it for a second season, maybe we'll believe it.
But who else would you buy? Who would you buy now? You'd have to, if to get a striker better than Tammy Abraham, you probably have to pay 150 million. That's not me saying that Tammy Abraham is that good, but that when Chelsea come calling for a striker, that's how much you pay.
I mean, he's scoring more than any striker that we've paid. A lot of money for
Pay another 70 million for Morata or a 90 million for Lukaku, or just keep Tammy Abraham.
I mean, and you talk about in terms of like people being forced into situations. Can I just point out Marcus Rashford wouldn't have broken through if there hadn't been multiple injuries?
It's always happens. Opportunity.
I don't think you can use them as a good. I wouldn't use them as an example either. Like, that would have been my point. Well, good youth prospect set up at United.
Well, that's our Tammy Abraham chat out of the way now.
We have to have a Tammy watch now every week.
Not at all. So let's get into the Football Fans Podcast. Myself, Jordan, here. This week on the podcast, I've got our regular Chelsea fan, Gabriel. Gabriel, how are you doing, sir?
You know how I'm doing. I'm doing real good.
God. This is going to be a horrible podcast. My dad texted me yesterday. He's a Chelsea fan. He's like, "Yeah, come with the podcast this week. Come with the podcast this week." And I'm like, "Bruv, just unsubscribe. Just forget about it. Just let it go. Chelsea ain't going to get no love this week on the show." We've also got Jack from the Fulhamish podcast. Jack, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, not too bad.
Can I still intro you as the host of the Fulhamish podcast, or is it Bleacher Report stuff now? Is that
you can go either way, mate. Look, be off of all ranks. I'll take it. I've moved up in the world. Take a step onward.
Progression. I like
general.
That.
I like general now.
I love that. And we've also got returning guest here, Faduma, the host of, I think she's off, Offside podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
You're welcome. You've invited me back. It's just a good sign.
Come on, man. I told you we loved you last time. There'll be more and more invitations for your good self going forward. So, before we get into the show, just a reminder to everybody to subscribe to the podcast. We are on Spotify as well as iTunes and across all the socials as well. Guys, I want to have a chat with you lot this week about systems and styles of play. Having a talk with a colleague of mine at work on Friday, actually, we were talking about the Man City Norwich game, and he was saying that, yeah, it's going to be a 7-0 for Man City because Norwich won't compromise on how they play their football. And he's a Liverpool fan. And he was saying that, you know, when we played them, we were quite surprised that they didn't try to just tweak their system a little bit, considering who they were playing, and they got smashed 4-1. And I made the point to him that I kind of like the fact that a lot of these smaller clubs now seem to have a philosophy and refuse to deviate away from it. And if that means taking a couple of slaps every now and again, then so be it. Fast forward 24 hours and Norwich refused to compromise on their system and ended up beating the champions 3-2. Start with you, Jack. Do you feel that teams, especially those that aren't equipped with the level of players that Man City or Liverpool top teams have, need to tweak their systems in accordance with who they're playing? Or do you like the fact that we're now seeing the likes of Norwich, Villa and Sheffield United to some degree say, no, we're going to play front foot, possession football, regardless of who we're playing?
I think it's important to have a philosophy and to have a style. And I think that straying too far away from it puts you in deep trouble. And I will refer back to Fulham straight away. So we're going it's what put us in real trouble last year, is that we were doing okay. Yes, we lost a couple of big games. We lost quite convincingly to City at the Etihad. We lost quite convincingly to Liverpool at Anfield. And we played that style of football. We tried to keep the ball. And obviously against those teams, it shot us in the foot a little bit. And we got beaten by teams that were like, realised we were a little bit naive, clocked onto what we were doing and made those decisions. But actually switching from a manager who had a possession-based approach in Slavica Jokanovic to Claudio Ranieri, whose approach was put 10 men behind the ball and look for the out ball, and we just didn't have the players to do that, is actually what sent us into a spiral of no return, basically. And if we had... I think there's a compromise to be made in some things. We needed a manager who was able to organise a defence. I think that bit's important. If you want to play possession football, you have to be able to defend as well. It's not just they keep the ball well, so therefore they are an attacking side. You can have teams like Norwich, and especially like Sheffield United, who are actually very, very solid defensive units, but they still play an attractive style of football. They still look to put their style on games. What Fulham had a problem was is that we didn't have a manager who, he you know, the whole point was we don't need to defend if we've got the ball. Well, okay, yeah, yeah. But you're not going to have the ball 80% of the time like you do in the Championship if you're playing against Liverpool or Man City. But you can still try and play that football. And you look at Norwich and they played that sort of lightning counter-attacking football. And you know, that system works so well for them, that 4-2-3-1 that allows them to sort of get wide, push the fullbacks on, drop the middle man deeper. And it does sort of allow them to do it in different ways. So some games they will look to control. They didn't really look to control the game against City. I think that's kind of what everyone's like, oh, they didn't abandon all their principles. And when they did get to have the ball, they tried to play nice football. But it's not like they suddenly were like, oh, we're going to try and out-possession City.
Yeah,
they just adapted their approach so that the style was still there, but it became more direct. And when they were, when they had that kind of opportunity on the counter, they took it.
Fadumo, do you feel like, you know, this start that Norwich have made to the Premier League in having a style of play that isn't 10 men behind the ball and trying to nick points to stay in the league, their approach currently will see them stay in the league? Or do you feel that this is the honeymoon period, and when it gets to the hard months against teams that are better than them, who were kind of in their groove, they will take quite a few fives, sixes and sevens?
I think when you come into the Premier League or when you go, and go up a league, you just have to go all in. Like, there isn't this whole half-hearted approach where because every game essentially counts. You'll see that with the fact that City are now dropping points and Liverpool are now running with it. And you saw that last season, like Liverpool were ahead and then they start to drop a few points, draws, and it costs them at the end of it. And that's what it is, essentially what it is. Even at the bottom half of the table, it will cost you. You will end up being like losing, being relegated. So I think it's important for them to just use the strength that they've got. Like, essentially playing against City, it finally, they didn't essentially go with what was always working for them, like, in the sense that they were, what a lot of other teams will do is they'll see City as like the champions of everything, and they'll be like, okay, we'll drop, we might as well work defensively, we'll put 10 minutes behind the ball, just hold all off the scoreline as much as we can and keep them away from the goal. But I think that will only work to some extent.
They're going
to
probably still score at some point.
They're going to score at some point and just work to your strengths, work to what has worked from you. Like, at the end of the day, they were promoted and they were doing well in their league, so you've worked to your strength. And other teams will probably see them as an underdog and will probably lapse a few times, which is what probably what City did and what eventually did cost them.
Is it a numbers game? If you're a Norwich or you're a Sheffield United or you're a Aston Villa, you think to yourself, if we play this brand of football, we are going to probably take a few hammerings at some points this season, but we're also going to win enough points in games to keep us in the league. Do you think it's
the that's game? It. And I think, you know, we've gone, I mean, we've spoken on the pod in the last 3-4 years about there's been a lot of teams who have just scraped in because there's been a lot of really poor teams in the relegation zone. And then you get another team that's fourth from bottom or fifth from bottom that stays up, and and they've been poor, and they have just been poor in that sense. I mean, you only have to win 10 games to get 30 points. You know, thinking about not losing is not going to be to your benefit. It's best to think about how you can win. And if you do take a few slaps, as you so eloquently put it, what does it matter? I mean, the thing is, you're Liverpool, mate. I think he was maybe a bit short-sighted, because looking at Norwich could have won that game as well. If with a bit more luck, they could have won that game as well as they did against
Man City. Liverpool fans, they say to me, as I think my pals said to me, was like, the narrative afterwards of that game was that, you know, Norwich were unlucky and they could have nicked something. Their argument, the Liverpool fans' argument, is that at 3-0, we took our foot off the gas. That's why it seemed like they were in the game. If we wanted to put our foot back on the gas, we could have scored 3 or 4 more goals and killed it off.
Does it work like that?
I don't know, but the narrative was Norwich were unlucky.
Also, Norwich had like 3 early chances.
That's what I'm talking about.
Norwich had 3 early chances early on in that game. And look, I think Liverpool more than deserved to win that game. That's not really the point. But the point is that there were openings, there were opportunities. And if you play like Norwich do, with the amount of talent they have in that attacking side, and people forget that these are good players. Emi Buendia is a wonderful, wonderful
footballer. I hadn't heard of him before the season, but I'm looking at him a little bit more now, and he looks good.
He was exceptional in the Championship for Norwich, and he was decent in Spain before that. So it's one of those things where they've picked up a good player there who's able to cut it at this level. And they have someone in Teemu Pukki who was good at Schalke, you know, and yes, had rough spells at Celtic.
He had some bad spells.
I watched him at Celtic a lot. And, you know, I was growing up at that point, and he wasn't good, but he also wasn't terrible. His goals ratio isn't shocking.
Always, it's quite bad.
It's not awful. I've seen worse. Let's put it that way.
I mean, Morata, but aside, I mean, there's not much worse goal ratio.
He had a tough time. He went to Sevilla as well, and he didn't cut it there. Very young. He was 18 when he went to Sevilla, and didn't work. But it worked at Schalke. He did well at Schalke.
He did. That's the one place
people liked
he did
him.
Bang.
And then, you know, and also in Rosenborg, and oh, not Rosenborg, in when he was in Finland and in, you know, in Scandinavia, he did well. All his scoring records were always really, really good. So there is something there that if you have these players, you're always going to get opportunities because Buendia and Puki score goals.
Can anybody think of a game in Premier League, even recent history, that was a bigger shock that also had the quality from Norwich on Saturday as well?
So it wasn't just parking the bus, it was actually...
Yeah, like we've seen United in their best being beaten by Bradford. We've seen Arsenal. We've seen top teams being beaten by the bottom teams.
Yeah.
But what struck me in this game was the quality from Norwich. They had a system, they had a plan. And some of the ball they were playing when they were attacking was good ball. This wasn't just like, let's bank in and we'll nick a header in the last minute. They were putting it on City when they needed to, and they defended really well. I can't think of
And the really impressive thing for me was, you know, City pulled the goal back before half time.
Yeah.
And all the commentators are talking and you're saying, you know, you can't see City now going 45 minutes without scoring. But actually, they still came back. They stuck to their guns and they kept on going. So in a way, I look at it as a really unique performance because most teams, even coming up, even if they were a bit adventurous in the first half, they might think, okay, we got a lead now, let's hang on for dear
life. That's why I rate Farker, because he obviously said at half time, no, I want a third goal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You go out there and get the next goal.
When Absolutely. Bournemouth came up, there was I remember that being a thing, that they came out and they played against teams. They didn't. Yeah. And actually, weirdly, Bournemouth have become more of a defensive and a little bit more of a conservative unit as we've come along the years. And I think that's obviously adaptation to the Premier League and all that. But when they came up, they were fearless.
Do you think they were the game changers? Do you think that maybe Bournemouth were the first team to come up and not do that whole, let's just try and get 30 points, 10 men behind the ball, let's try and get drawn?
I think that's short-sighted. But in recent history, yeah.
I think they're probably the first, because Wolves last year, Wolves had a higher calibre of player than the Norwiches, granted. But Wolves came up last year, and I will say it because I make many predictions and most go wrong. Yeah. I did say last year Wolves would get seventh at the start of the season, and they did it. We lost.
But George, what's that got nothing to do with their style of play? I don't know.
The point I'm making is that I was confident that they wouldn't deviate from what got them to the Premier League.
No, but they did go good. But Wolves, okay, they varied it.
They adapted
it.
You're right.
In the big games, they actually played quite deep and worked in the counter. Same way they did kind of against United this year.
Mm.
So, yeah, you just wanted to give your Wolves example.
Yeah, I did. The tummy thing's killing me, I'm not going to lie. So I've got to try.
Got to have something positive. The first three teams ever to stay up, the first time ever it happened in the Premier League era, the promoted teams going up was Blackburn, Bolton and Fulham in 2001.
Mm.
And all three of those teams had very differing styles, but Bolton were entertainers back in those days. And you remember that, you know, where it's Big Sam built that unit, you know, JJ Kocher and all of those players. Yes, they were a little bit sort of straight down the barrel with Nolan and up front. But like, you know, the Kevins, shall we say, or Kevin Davies, Kevin Nolan. But they had a style and they stuck to it. And I think that's kind of important. Yes, it wasn't as pretty.
But that's the thing. You know, Norwich don't seem to be doing that whole, you know...
But that was how Bolton were in the Championship
true.
You know, they came... And I think that's personnel, isn't it? It goes back to that point. So if you come up and you are a functional unit like Cardiff were last season, and they played in a very direct style that used their kind of ability to cross, long throw-ins, corners, set pieces, it doesn't make it any different that they tried to stay up playing that way and Fulham tried to stay up originally trying to play, you know, possession football. Mm. That's just what those two teams were in the Championship, and they tried to keep their identities. Fulham abandoned theirs and it cost them dearly. Cardiff very nearly stayed up and it wasn't as pretty and it wasn't as... But it worked. Mm. And there's a reason that they nearly stayed up, because they played to their strengths, and it all comes down to that at the end of the day, isn't it? Play to the players. If you tried to play Norwich in three at the back, four sitting midfielders, they'd get hammered because they don't know how to play like that.
Mm.
And so actually playing to those players and what they're good at is the sensible thing to do instead of actually becoming more defensive.
It's that myth, isn't it, that, you know, playing out from the back is always a risk and trying to hold the ball is always a risk. But you probably lose as many goals of sitting off and giving someone the ball as you do as playing out
especially
from the back
against
well.
The top team.
Exactly.
Vadouma, do you feel like Norwich should have the attitude of trying to win every single game, or do you think they're going to stay up? They're going to have to be a little bit more... flexible with how they approach games, or would you just continue to do what they're doing now? Listen, we've beaten City. We played well against Liverpool in the first game of the season. Let's just try. We're going to try and beat every team in the league.
Yeah, but you know,
like,
playing well is all great. But if you didn't win, you didn't win. At the end of the day, like, it is, as much as it like, you know, there are some positive pointers to take from the Liverpool playing at the gate. It didn't ultimately lead to a win for them.
But surely there'll be more City results than there will Liverpool results.
Yeah.
By playing the way they're playing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They may get slapped a few times.
Exactly.
But they do it.
No, I think it's important for them to keep that playing identity, because I think ultimately what the stereotype with lower teams is that it's kind of defensive football. It's boring to watch as like fans of football.
Just try and get a point.
Yeah,
here,
it's just trying to get a point there. It's kind of like right off the top five or six teams are just trying to get your point from the bottom half of the table. But I don't think that guarantees like staying up for anyone anymore. So I think it's just trying to get your points wherever you can. Just go for it. Like, if you're going to get relegated, you're going to get relegated. But you want to try and obviously try and grab the points wherever you can. You don't want to go into something already with that losing mentality, like we're not going to grab anything from here, when that's clearly not the case with the City.
Indeed.
And it's a lot more enjoyable as well. Like, yeah, I would watch a Norwich.
Like, Norwich game, like, even it looked entertaining. I don't know if you've seen, but there's small clips on like Twitter and stuff. You just see like the City game and players just running circles around and just absolutely lost. And it's entertaining to watch as a football absolutely. Fan, but you don't want to watch like another game and go just kind of predictable. Like,
you wouldn't want to watch a West Brom, as George would say.
Oh, God.
I was going to say Villa, but you know
what? If you're Burnley, you shouldn't start playing possession football. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Burnley do what they do and they're good at it.
Stick to it. I think that's a really good point you made for them in terms of entertaining fans, because what I was saying to my friend on Friday was that I think what's happening now is that managers are knowing you've got about a year, maybe 2 years max to keep your job. The best way of keeping the fans on side is, even if you lose games, if you play a certain brand of football that's entertaining, you're much more likely to keep the fans on side. Okay, we lost today, but at least we played some good football. It's when you're losing and you're playing crappy football that the fans are like, well, the board are not happy because you're losing, and the fans are not happy because the football's dry. So you're better off as a manager thinking, I'm going to get sacked at some point anyway.
Yeah.
I might as well try and play some good football.
We look at Sarri last year. He won and still ended up out of his job,
But I think even for the top club, I think for the kind of the clubs low down the league, I think the manager's mentality is turning to, I might as well just try and entertain, because then I've got the fans on side. At least they're paying their money.
I'm agreeing with you.
I think it's deviating too much from the club's identity. So like, if a club specifically play a style of football and you come in as a new manager and you switch that up completely and then you have a losing streak, you're already screwed, because the club's against you, the fans are against you. It's just like, you want to try and not deviate too much from what that club's identity is.
Mm. Are there some clubs like to think they have identities that they don't?
The
West Ham way.
I also think you underestimate how aggressive football fans are, and I don't mean this in a particularly negative way, but we play like the ball around the back at Fulham a lot. It's gone back to that now. We started playing like the football that got us promoted eventually. And the amount of people who, when the centre back has it, is like, get forward. If I could ban one phrase from football, it would be the word forward. Like, it kills me. Like, we're 3-0 up. We've got permission. Stop shouting at the centre back to lump it. And I honestly do think you underestimate how much it's like football. And like, people are like, oh, I don't know about this tippy tappy stuff. You're like, really, like that? Like, we've just won 4-0 against Liverpool. Like, we've completely played them off the park. We've had 90% possession. And they're like, I'm not sure
about that.
Get rid of it. Why are you playing back there?
Seriously, like, why are you playing it back to the keeper? It's really weird. And I do think people underestimate that. Like, when you talk about it in this kind of environment, it's like, obviously we love to see like exciting attacking football, but people, when it's their own club, get really nervous about that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it does like always baffle me. I'm like, man, guys, this is how we went up.
And that's why I think, as a neutral fan, I'm not a Norwich supporter, we can all say like we'd prefer them to play the football they're playing right now, but if you're a Norwich fan, would you accept that if it's at the cost of losing points? Mm-hmm. But and I think the answer to that, answer my own question, is yes. I think fans of teams like Norwich would like, we'd rather have a good year in the Premier League playing decent football and go down than be a West Brom or be a Cardiff.
I would have rather I would not have minded our relegation half as much last year if we'd stuck to our identity. But I would have had far less problem with it. But at the end of the day, still relegated. And a lot of people say that.
Just briefly on your club for Duma, United.
It's a bit of a sensitive one.
We will keep it brief. Just on that same theme, is the problem of your club the opposite? You don't have any identity.
Yep.
You don't have any way of playing football at the moment. You know what I mean?
See, I wasn't even thinking of you for Duma.
No, but do you know what it is? It's literally like, if someone was to say, what's the United's been identity for the last couple of years, I was like, listen, I don't know, man. It's just literally like, we're clutching at everything. Like, any given thing, like, any form of success we have for 2 days, that's the one we kind of cling on to. And it's it shows in the fact that what the results have been for the last couple of games. What, I don't know how many wins is it in 13 games? So like two, is it? Yeah, such disappointment. two wins in like 13 games. It is really depressing. But yeah, I think the lack of identity is a bit of a problem at the moment. It kind of translates on the field as well, and even amongst the fans, it's kind of all over the place.
As a fan, would you accept Solskjaer just deciding, okay, you know what, win, lose or draw, sacked or not, the next six games, I'm going to adopt this style of play. And whether we win, whatever happens, I'm going to stick with this. Or do you feel that maybe his head's so scrambled, he's, like you say, kind of clutching to, well, we, you know, let's be a counter a team. Or let's be a, he's kind of scrambling for a style of play.
Yeah.
Would you, as a fan, would you prefer him to decide, whatever the result is, we're playing this way for the next six games?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Or can you not do that as a manager? Do you have to be flexible?
No, I think you do have to be. Obviously, you have to be flexible depending on who you're playing. Like, I don't think one style of play suits all the clubs in the league. Like, I think that would be impossible, and I don't think you'd be guaranteed success in any form of way. But I do think there is some form of play you have to commit to and maybe deviate from it a little bit. But don't go, like, you know, attacking one game and then complete defending the next game. It does not make any sense. And it kind of is all over the place. Like, I feel like, yeah, we won the last game, but I don't think it was ultimately a great game if you look at it as a whole. I think, what, it was a penalty?
That was the takeaway I got from United's last few games, in that they seem to be able to score a goal, but the chance creation is quite low.
Even strangely, when they beat us 4-0. It's weird to think of a game that you won 4-0, but you didn't really play well or open the team up. It's strange,
camera,
right?
Our camera guy Mars not having it. You thought you played well?
I mean, we didn't play well. It was 4-0. Like, relax.
Yeah.
That's the point. You won 4-0. No one's disputing that. Yeah. But I remember saying on radio that same night, and I got battered for it. United did not play well.
We didn't play well.
You didn't play well. You were just clinical.
On that game, what we did well was the counter-attacking.
You were clinical, yeah.
It was incredible. Like, lightning.
If you didn't play well every week and you won 4-0, you'd be all right.
But that's my point. How sustainable is not playing well?
Yeah, no, I think
it's
you're
just
right.
Not for me.
I think more than all of this, like, there's absolutely no way United can have an identity because they don't know who they are behind the scenes. Never mind in the dugout, never mind on the pitch. There's so much there's so much instability from right from the top of the club to the bottom that there's no way that someone could be like, right, this is our playing philosophy.
And that all of that translates down to the fans. Like, that's what I mean. So, like, we can see all of that instability. Although no one's coming out and saying it, like, so no one from the board is going, this is what's going on. As fans, you can see that all happening because that's what I'm saying. It's so important for clubs to hold on to that identity and maybe try and tweak play around that, but essentially try and stick to it as much as possible. Because if you don't, you kind of end up just sort of where we're at right now, which isn't great.
It goes back to your Norwich thing.
I mean, yes.
Norwich have a brilliant director of football, and he installed Farker and let him go through a season where actually Norwich weren't very good in their first season under Farker in the Championship. And at this point last season, Norwich were 19th in the Championship and they went on to win the division. And they have a director of football who believes in the project, who believes in the style of football and has a philosophy that he wants to implement, and therefore picked the management side that he thought would suit that, allowed him to bring the players in for those kind of positions. And it's the same at Leeds. You know, Bielsa has his ups and downs, and we all saw what happened at the end of the last season. But Leeds are flying again. And I think that they will probably see it out this time round. And if they don't, then it will obviously be well amusing. But, like, equally, you know, they have a director of football who knows what he's doing. He's got his ideas in. And from there, you appoint managerial staff who believe in those ideals, players to get them in, and it all kind of works in tandem. And that's what United lack from complete top to bottom.
All right, let's move on now. Do you follow much women's football?
Here and there.
Here and there. Okay, I'll come to you next. So, Fadumo, one thing I wanted to speak to you about was the obviously the WSL's kicked off a couple of weeks ago now, right?
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, I think it was off. I know you were at the Chelsea-Tottenham game last weekend, that was?
Yeah, last weekend.
And there was a whole big thing around the attendances, and there were big numbers. I think at Stamford Bridge it was... Was it 31,000? Was that at the Etihad?
They were about the same.
Etihad was 32 or 31, and then I think Stamford Bridge was about 20-something.
Okay. 29, I think. I think it was just under 60,000 between them.
So. There you go. So there was a big discussion around that and how you maintain that and kind of that you won't get that every time you play.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
One thing that came out was discussion around the amount of free tickets, in particular, there were at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
And there was a whole discussion around whether it's you're better off giving away free and cheap tickets to get people in the door so they have the experience of women's football. They might like it and they'll come back and they'll invest in it versus the idea that it cheapens the game. Where do you stand on that?
I think free tickets are a no. I don't think you should give up. I think Stamford Bridge shows it doesn't work. Like, to give up 40,000 tickets and to have 25,000 show up just shows you that free tickets doesn't work that well. Mm-hmm. Wembley, Women's FA Cup final at Wembley was 42,000 and they were £15 a ticket. People will pay. And ultimately what people are paying for is the experience at Stamford Bridge. They're paying for that experience at the Etihad or Old Trafford or wherever you're playing. So they will pay a little bit of money. Like, I think United's game was £7 a ticket. That's not a lot of money to get yourself into Etihad Stadium. Considering the amount you have to play to go and see City, if you're a City fan or if you're like a fan of football and you want to see that stadium and you want to have an experience there, you'll easily pay £7 to go in there and watch a game. Like, I think not putting a value on it is, I think, pretty
dangerous.
And I think you're going down like a really stupid way of doing
it. Do you not buy the argument that, you know, if you can get an extra 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people in the door, that's A, data that you can then promote the next game to, and B, of that 10,000, even if 500 enjoyed it and want to go to their next women's game, it's worth it?
But obviously, there are benefits. I think you'd be mad to be like, there are zero benefits to doing it. I think that not putting... I think there are all certain ways you can work this that don't necessarily do the same. I know that at Atletico, for their game, which I think last... Oh, it was Athletic Club, I apologise. Athletic Club had a game last season where they gave out free tickets to season ticket holders and then everyone else had to pay to get in. So if you're a season ticket holder, you could go for free. And they got 60,000 at Sam Amez.
That's right, yeah,
similar numbers at the Wonder for Atletico. I don't know what their strategy was. But something that interests me is that at the Bombonera for Boca Juniors, they do double headers. And they go back to back, and they do one price for the whole thing. So you, if you buy a ticket, you get both games.
They did that at Emirates. Did that this year? I think it was pre-season.
Emirates Cup.
Yeah,
just can't even win.
Yeah, that one.
We're having a proper chat here, Gabriel. Yeah.
Sorry.
Lower the tone of your shots.
Thank you so much. That one, yeah. They did that. So yeah. Arsenal men's team played, then Arsenal women's team played.
I think that's vaguely interesting. Yeah. Because I think that then you're not necessarily, you're not cheapening it and you're not being like, this is a free thing. You're being like, these are two games.
Which was first.
And you're putting them together. I don't know how it works. Because I'm just thinking,
if the women's games, if you're not a women's football fan and it's second, you just leave.
I think it's first. I think definitely at the Bombonera.
First,
I'm sure people do. I'm sure it's not the same attendances for both things, but it increases. That's something where you're increasing like attendances on the same wavelength as if you give it to people and then they'll be like, okay, this is fine, without being like, this is free, turn up if you want. Mm. Whereas, you know, if you completely just be like, oh, doors open, see what happens, then you start to put sort of dangerous, this isn't worth your money kind of tags on things, and I think that's not a precedent I'd be wanting to set.
What do you think, Jeez? I know that you're not the biggest fan of women's football, but would you be more likely to go and see a game at Chelsea if it was free as opposed to paying £7 to £10 for a ticket?
Well, I mean, I guess the Chelsea Tottenham game just came past and there were free tickets and I didn't really take them up, so I guess in that sense it wouldn't have made a difference to me in that sense. But like this, if I was interested in the game, then I'd pay for it. You wouldn't need to give me the ticket free. So maybe the point is get people interested in the game, don't just dish out free tickets. Because
how do you get them interested? If get them in the door first, make them see the game for free. Oh, you know what? This is really good.
Like the World Cup, like the amount of people that saw women's football at that point, obviously like that 25,000, regardless of, I don't care what free ticket you give me to go and see, like, I'm going to use the topic of Aston Villa again because I just
want to. You've got a beef with Everton.
I would not go to Birmingham. I'm not trekking out there to go watch a game. Like, just because, do you know what I mean? Like, I think, but I would see, like, you have to, like, 11 million people essentially watch women's football on the TV, like, over the summer. And I'm not saying bring 11 million people to the stadiums. I'm just saying, like, if we can translate some of those people into actual fans at stands, that's something. And it kind of has happened with the fact that we managed to get those numbers. But again, I don't think it's sustainable. sustainable to bring it to have free tickets. It doesn't. It's not something that the stadiums themselves can maintain because it's a cost to run a stadium for a day.
Yeah.
And to be running it for free is essentially crazy, and it's not something they'll be able to do on a more regular basis. And I think that's the argument that's going to eventually come out of this if it continues. The fact that, you know, the next international break they're going to have. They're trying to make it a WSL Women's Weekend to have lots of games at stadiums. If they come out free again, and the next Chelsea are again going to be playing a game at Stamford Bridge, so you can't miss that one.
Should you aim for a person like me, because I go to Stamford Bridge every week, so it doesn't feel like an experience, you know? Someone who goes there who doesn't get to go to football, as you talked about before, should they not be the people that you aim for? And if you're going to give free tickets to anyone, Should those be the people?
I think there's something in the fact that Chelsea women play at King's Meadow out at AFC Wimbledon, and it's such a nightmare to get to. Like, such a nightmare. And it's one of those things where I remember going out for the Champions League semi-final against PSG, and the game was fantastic, and I really enjoyed the entire thing. But getting there and getting back, and I live in West London. Chelsea would, because Fulham's, you know, women's team isn't a professional unit. Mm. So therefore, Chelsea would be the closest kind of team to me, women's team to me in West London. And it's miles away, like miles and miles away. And I'm sure it's great for people who live down in that part of the world. And look, you'd have to look at the full demographic of Chelsea fans and where they come from to try and understand these things. But for some, you know, a lot of Chelsea fans that I know who all live round West London, who live, you know, Hammersmith and Fulham and Chelsea and all those areas, it's a nightmare. And thus, are you going to struggle to bring those people in, even if, you know, even if you were like, oh, you have to find places that have the right kind of demographic is the wrong word, but like, you know, the right kind of people around it that are interested and able to then get there, because then people go. That's the
problem that the WSL women's football has in general, is the fact that it's all good and well to host these games at such big stadiums and everyone has a great day. But essentially, like, if you're a Man United and City fan, you went to Etihad Stadium and you watched the game, you had a great time. If you want to go and watch Man United, you need to go to Leigh Sports Valley, which is in Greater Manchester, and there's no train station in the area.
It's a mission.
Like, it's a mission. It's crazy. I think that is a bigger problem that goes on in women's football rather than, you know, having the host. Because if it's not a weekly thing, it's just essentially everyone comes out, had a great time one weekend, and then won't do it again until it comes up again a few months.
Well, I'm just keen to see how they kind of sustain it going forward, because the numbers were impressive. But, I'd like to see that a strategy that kind of helps that maintain. But we'll keep across the women's game over the next few weeks anyway. Let's move on now to Watford. Going to have a quick chat about Watford and to do so, I'm going to bring in... when I booked Mike, I was expecting to be speaking under these circumstances. Mike from the Rookery End podcast. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm glad Watford is such a source of amusement for you guys.
they're laughing at me, Mike, because I'm an Arsenal fan. They're laughing at me. First question, do you see that result on the weekend as worrying because you were playing well and still losing 2-0? Or do you take the positives away that you found a way to get back in the game and should have really won the game in the end?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been talking to a few Arsenal supporting colleagues and I said, I don't know which is more tragic, Arsenal's defending or the fact that Watford only managed to score two.
I know, Mike. I know.
But to answer your question, to try and do it seriously, I think it is disappointing we didn't get the win, because I think, you know, anyone that saw the game would recognise that probably Watford deserved to win it. The stats tell one story, but anyone that saw the game saw what an absolutely barnstorming second half from Watford, and I think a little bit more composure in front of goal and they'd have probably won it quite comfortably. But looking at it in context of the entire season, Watford were a team very, very low on confidence, even lower on points. So to get, you know, at half-time at home to Arsenal, even if Arsenal aren't performing at their best, 2-0 down against a team like Arsenal to come back and get a draw is always going to be a good result. So mixed emotions, but I think we all needed it. Watford supporters needed it, the club needed it, the team needed it, and Kike needed it. Everyone walked away from Vicarage Road with a spring in their step. How long that will last with Man City to come on Saturday, I'm not really sure.
We'll get to Kike in just a moment, but just going back to Gracia, your previous manager, was the second harsh? I know the back end of last season was really bad and the start of this one hasn't been good. But was it, and obviously you've got a precedent of doing this sort of thing anyway, but as a fan, was it a little bit harsh? Do you think that, you know, with time he could have turned it around?
No, I think he had time. I mean, if you roll last season into this season, he'd lost 11 out of 14 matches. 11 out of 14. Hadn't kept a clean sheet since February. I don't really care which team you are, which manager you are. You're going to be under severe pressure if you're delivering those sort of results. And not only were the results bad, but the performances were poor and getting worse. And as I alluded to earlier, the confidence amongst the team has been dreadful. You know, they're absolutely on the floor. There's no belief there whatsoever. And there was no sign of it being turned around. It got steadily worse from sort of towards the end of last season. And it hadn't just carried on. It got worse again. So I think Javi had probably, you know, there's a huge amount of goodwill towards him. And I know he said it's brutal to say that I think it was the right decision to sack him. But there's a huge amount of goodwill. Watford fans will always remember him incredibly fondly. It's important to remember the mess that he inherited when he took over the season before last, which was after Marco Silva's left us in a terrible state. And he had to come round and come in and sort out a very demotivated and fractured squad and to ultimately keep us in the league. So, and he did that. And last year he delivered us an FA Cup final. Obviously, the less said about that, the better. But we were in with a sniff of Europe for most of the season. So he did a great job, but he had reached the end of, I think he peaked. The performances were poor and the results were even worse. That stat, I think, 11 defeats out of 14 is damning. And I defy anyone to argue with that, really.
And just finally, Mike, as Watford fans, are you now kind of coming round to the idea that this is just how your owners do business? You know, I mean, like 4 or 5 years ago, it might have been a case of, you know, what's going on here? This is not good. This sacking culture is not really the way we want things to be done. But considering you're now pretty much an established Premier League club, do you almost like the fact that they're kind of so brutal in the way they deal with their managers? Because, I don't know, they've got high standards and they want to keep pushing forward. Or are you still a little bit uncomfortable with this kind of sacking culture at the first sign of trouble?
I'm going to pick you up on that. I don't think it is the first sign of trouble, so I think that's unfair. But what I would say is what I do like about it is the fact they're decisive. They don't sit on their hands and wait for the next international break, for example, when we could have 3 or 4 points still bottom of the league and then look around for a manager, and most head coaches are in work and are not looking to move, certainly to a club that's in trouble. So they act decisively and they act in Watford's best interest. That's the bottom line. Anyone who's been to Vicarage Road since Gino Pozzo took over will have seen the stadium get better, the facilities get better, the football get better, the club get bigger and the reach get better. And every change they've made has had a positive impact. So whilst I'd love to be on the phone to you guys in 5 years' time and Kike Sanchez Flores is still in charge, I'm sure Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury would love that as much as anyone. But if he's not going to deliver what we need, which is that incremental improvement, that build on the base that the last coach created for Watford, then ultimately he isn't good enough for the role. Everyone wants a bit of stability. Everyone would love that continuity. But what we want more than that is for Watford to improve and to be the club that I think we all know they can be. So I wouldn't say we like it, but we're absolutely on board with it. You will find very few Watford fans who've got a bad word to say about Gino Pozzo and the way he runs the club.
And just briefly on Sanchez Flores, what's all that about? I mean, why'd they sack him and then decide that he's good enough to bring back? Do you know what the rationale there is?
So I think when Kike Sanchez Flores departed the first time, it wasn't a sacking. I think it was a more mutual parting of the waves. He had a 1-year break clause in his contract, and they agreed to exercise that at the start at the end of that first Premier League season. There had been a drop off in form, so it was a relatively poor end to the season. And I think both parties decided they wanted to explore different opportunities. So I think it was relatively amicable. It wasn't kicked out the back door, so to speak. There wasn't a falling out or anything like that. And I think since then, Watford have moved on and changed, and they've worked out what they want from the head coach. And of course, Kike has gone away and got some experience, more experience. He did relatively well at Espanyol. I think he guided them to 8th in the year after he left Watford. He's been away to China. That wasn't quite so successful, but it's all experience. It's all stuff that he can use now to get Watford out of this sticky situation. So it was a surprise. But hopefully it'll turn out to be another canny move from Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury.
Mike, cheers for your time, pal. Thank you very much for coming on.
No worries. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's Mike from the award-winning From the Rookery End podcast. Just going through the last... What are you laughing for?
We're always plugging for you, the award-winning...
Well, you know what?
They beat us for it.
I'll have you know. Also,
interesting, though, what Mike says there is that... he said, any manager with that record, 2 wins in 13, will be under pressure. I don't care what club you are, unless you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
I love it. I love it. So I guess we've done the Watford bit there. We have to now speak about my club, who won the receiving end of that comeback yesterday. Gabriel, let's start with you. David Luiz was sold to Arsenal this summer, and you're one of the majority that felt that it was a good move for all three parties involved.
Yeah.
Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, he's taken Arsenal down. That's
that was the job. Agent David, yeah.
What was it? I heard the stat like 3 penalties in his
160
whole, games. 160
games
and LNG. 2 penalties.
2 and 5.
But listen, like it. I don't think many people said it was a good move. What they said was that he was better than what Arsenal have. And I still maintain that he is still better than what Arsenal
have.
Did you not see Socrates?
No, I'm not saying that he's great, but I'm not saying that David Luiz, Socrates, Mustafi, they're all much of a muchness.
No.
It's David, all much of a muchness.
David Luiz is a class above those guys, which says a lot about those guys. More than about but it's one of those things, like, I told you I like Luiz, like, you know, as a, like, you know, a bit of affinity towards him, like, because a player who's been there for a long time. He was in the Champions League team, but I said to a couple of my mates who were like really furious about it at the beginning of the season, especially after we lost 4-0 to United, that we never sell a player to a rival and it goes out and it turns out well. So it was the same with Cech, the same with Luiz, the same with Matic now, who can't get in the team, the same with Juan Mata, who
Van Persie did all right.
No, Chelsea. I don't know about Arsenal.
Sorry.
Arsenal feed the club. So yeah, but we never sell a player to a rival, and then he goes on and does better than what he's done. We tend to sell players.
Kevin De Bruyne, Mohamed Salah.
We didn't sell them to rivals. You know what I'm saying? Specifically to rivals. So yeah, I wasn't scared when we sold Luiz, and if you look at it, Lampard's probably there with a big grin on his face. His place with Tamore's hit 1 from 30 yards in the top corner
weekend,
in the same weekend. So, yeah, no. So, yes, it is good for all parties. But Arsenal needed better than him, but he's still better than what Arsenal have.
Fadouma, something that I think went under the radar massively when Luiz got a lot of heat yesterday. Xhaka gets heat every week from the Arsenal fans. There was a lot of heat for a lot of the players. I thought, did you watch the game yesterday?
No.
What for? Did you watch the game?
I watched bits of it, but I didn't catch the whole game.
Well, I'll ask you then, Jack. Pepe was non-existent for 94 minutes.
Yeah.
I feel like he got massively... He went under the radar in terms of people being criticised. Now, that might be because he's new. It might be because he's our record signing. He might be getting a little bit of a blight. But am I the only one that thought... He didn't play poorly. He just didn't do anything.
No,
he literally did nothing.
He was just anonymous for the whole thing. Look, I said at the start of the season that I think it will take Pepe a year to settle easily, if not more. I think he's a wonderful player in transition when you have the ball a lot, but I think he lacks end product, and he has this thing that he goes missing, and it's happened before, and I was worried when Arsenal paid so much for him, because I was like, I don't think he's worth that kind of money. And Watford signed Ismail Assar, and Ismail Assar came on and did
changed
business
game, yeah.
and I think that would have been a better signing for 11 million than Pepe would have been for 80. And saw someone tweet earlier. I said this before the season started. I saw a tweet earlier that was like, I think Pepe is actually playing in installments, so like you're not allowed to get the next bit out of him.
That's so brutal.
But yeah, you're absolutely spot on. He was anonymous.
Fadumo, is Emre in trouble? Because there's the Arsenal fan base probably up there with West Ham fans and. West Ham fans, yeah.
Just West Ham
are probably the most reactionary fan base in the Premier League. And some of them are kind of saying that, you know, he's on thin ice now, no top four, he's got to go. And once you kind of get through the kind of noise and hullabaloo of the disappointment, do you feel that if he doesn't get top four, he has to go?
I think he has to go, but do I think he'll go? No. I don't think he'll go.
You don't think he'll go?
No, I don't think he'll go. Arsenal have shown they've got a commitment to managers longer than anyone else probably should have. And
it's
I think
a new regime.
His
contract's up this year, but there's an extra year.
Yeah, there's an extra year, like an extended...
Yeah, like
an optional extension.
I reckon they'll probably keep him on for another year as a benefit of kind of doubt. Because I think with him and like with the team he inherited, if you look at it like that, it wasn't exactly the greatest team, and he's kind of working what he has. But at the same time, he had the option to make lots of decent buys over the summer, and essentially that didn't really happen as such. So I think if he doesn't get top four,
that's a failure for him.
Absolutely, it's 100% a failure for him. I think going into the Europa League final was a failure to him, and for him anyway, it's like everything pretty much so far has been a failure. So I think
it's in line with Arsenal normal.
I mean, in the sense that, you know, like Arsenal, if you just look at the fact that the players have got, like you've got Mustafi, and I think Mustafi himself knows that he's not a great player, but for some reason he's still being kept hanging around. Like I feel like the only one that benefited from this whole like Luis coming to Arsenal was Luis himself. Like to him, he got the best deal ever he was like, I'm not moving from London, I'm training down the road. Like but Arsenal were the ones who
lost.
And I think what they'll do is they will continue to lose for another year. And then, but knowing Arsenal fan culture and how much top four is to them, I think if he doesn't...
Just shut up for 2 minutes.
2 minutes, mate.
No.
You're not going to get your trophies, that was just saying.
Yeah. I mean, they don't really have a Champions League trophy, do they? Sorry. They do. Arsenal women's team have a Champions League. I mean, in that sense, you do. But anyway.
There's guns everywhere here.
There's so much blood. In short, he'll be staying for the extension.
John, before you get too reactionary, aren't you level third on points with, you know, Spurs, Chelsea and United?
No. Are we?
Yes. Like, this is it. Everybody overreacts all the time.
He goes to check the table on bbc.co.uk. Okay, yeah, we're seventh, but level on, yeah, okay.
So this is a thing, right? I think you're absolutely spot on, and I think that if he doesn't get top four, it's a failure because
I'm not saying that. I'm asking.
I think that is a thing because you look at City and Liverpool, and they're just streets ahead of everyone, and that's fine, and you just have to kind of deal with that. And then you look at the rest of it, and Spurs are being quite weird and some weeks turning up and some weeks not in a very sort of Spursy manner in many ways. And then, you know, United have a squad that's paper thin and managed by a bloke who has absolutely no experience, and Chelsea weren't allowed to sign any players. So if you look at these two things, if Arsenal don't finish in front of United and Chelsea, I think that they will be worried. And I would put that on there right now. And that's not even really any disrespect to the other two teams. I just think that's how the fan base will feel about it.
Is this going to be a season, just briefly, Jack, where you feel that because of the reasons you've just outlined there between Arsenal, United and Chelsea, that it's going to be a case of 1 week, Arsenal the laughing stock and they're in crisis. Next week, it's United and Arsenal and Chelsea win. The week after, it's Chelsea and United. Do you know what I mean?
Don't ask down into this.
You lost 4-0 first game of the season.
We're playing kids, so we can let off everything. You know?
but that's the point. Are all three of those teams have big problems?
Man, I think this is football
they'll
now.
They'll
in
take
general.
It in turns of who's in crisis out of the three.
Yeah. Well, I also think just the fact that like social media is so reactionary now. Mm. I mean, look, Arsenal haven't made it easy on themselves because they are a reactionary club in a reactionary age, right? So like everyone's reactionary, and then there's you lot. So like, I don't think you made it easy for yourselves, but equally. Like that's just how it is now. Every time someone loses, everyone's like, we're here. And look, I work at Bleacher where the whole thing is making like images for the end of games. And it's like which thing will, if you make an image about Arsenal losing, it's like you're going to get Spurs fans retweeting this, you're going to get Chelsea fans retweeting this, you're going to get United fans retweeting it. And if I do another one the next week, this is Ollie's lost control of the wheel and Old Trafford's in flames, and you're going to get Arsenal fans retweeting and that's just how it is. Yeah. It's just the kind of age we live in. But you'll be fine. When Kieran Tierney comes back in and becomes the second best left back in the Premier League, you're going to be absolutely fine.
See, and also just briefly, there's this idea that I'm seeing people tweeting that you know, when three of our back four arguably are out injured, Holding, Tierney and Bellerin. When they come back, Arsenal are going to be like, you know, we'll see how the... I'm like, it's Tierney, Holding and Bellerin. It's not Cafu, Cole and bloody Maldini we're talking about.
I'm really be careful here. Because I'll have the Manx land.
I just think to myself...
The Manx Roberto Carlos coming back.
Easy. I'm just, Tierney's not played in the Premier League before. We wanted Bellerin out 18 months ago. That's how much we liked him. And Holding, I like Holding. I've said for that I like him. But it's Rob Holding. Let's have it right. It's Rob Holding. So this idea that when they both come back into the team for Dumo,
as if they're going to be like these saviours and suddenly... Yeah, no.
Listen, we might well improve and that probably is three of our back four. But I just don't understand this. When they come back, we've got players out. I'm like, you've got... Anyway.
I think Tierney's genuinely class, by the way.
I think so too. He's not playing in the Prem, so it's hard to kind of...
Yeah, but like, nor had Andy Robertson before, you know, he came up for... You know, I honestly think Tierney has the same... Like, has the...
Well, they're saying Scotland is better than Robertson.
I'm not quite sure about that, but I think he has the ability to make the same impact on Arsenal that Robertson made on Liverpool. Mm. Not that they're necessarily the same, you know, caliber of player right now, although I do think Tierney's ceiling is as high, if not a little bit higher.
Okay.
But I think that he'll have that impact on Arsenal because he is so, so good, both going forwards and backwards. He is a sum player.
Okay, that's Arsenal done now, because I know there'll be certain regulars on the pod. Marvin and Akin. You never talk about Arsenal when they lose. You never talk about Arsenal. So we've done Arsenal now, so we can move on. Right. Let's just write a few more quick ones I want to mention. How big a loss, G, do you think Laporte will be for City in terms of the title race? Because I'm not so sure it's hyperbole to suggest that I think it's a game changer. I think it could really impact their season. I said the same thing about Alisson when he got injured, so I've got to be fair and equate the same level of importance that Laporte has for City on their team.
Yeah, I mean, I think on paper, it does look like a big loss, especially if you look at this, not even so much from the traditional defensive stats, but actually from building from the back,
the way they want to play.
Yeah, you know, Laporte is well out ahead of all the other defenders in that sense. But what I would say is what Pep, and kind of going back to what you said about tactics at the beginning, I think Pep is the best at finding solutions. And whether it is Fernandinho back there or it's a change in shape, I would back Pep to find a solution. Now, whether 5 points at this stage is too much a gap to build because of the way it went last year, who knows? But I think by the end of the season, City will be strong because Pep will find a way to plug the hole.
Champions League, Jack resumes this week.
Yes.
First of all, who are your favourites?
My favourites? I find it hard to look beyond the Barcelona squad, but I just have a funny feeling about Atletico. I think Atletico are set up...
Atletico,
no,
you?
I think Atletico are set up to beat teams over two legs. Like, I think that they've got one of the... I don't think Atletico have enough in the tank to win the league, but I do think over two legs it can beat anyone. And I just have a feeling about Atleti this year. I don't know why, but I think if on paper, if you ask me who's going to win the Champions League, I find it hard to look past Barcelona.
Fadumo, is there a team, standout team that you think, I mean, beyond the main four or five, is there a team that you think could do a ting, or do you think the winner will come from a Barca, a Real, a Bayern?
Yeah, no, I think in Liverpool. Terms of like, in another sense, I don't think English teams will fare out as well as they did last year.
You don't think?
No. I don't think so. Even from a perspective like Europa League and Champions League, I think last year was a very lucky year for a lot of them. But I don't think it's something they can... Other than...
Why do you think it was lucky?
Other than like Liverpool, I don't see anyone being able to continue that kind of energy going forward. I think Real Madrid are probably the best shot at...
Real Madrid winning
or like Barcelona or something like that.
I've got a sneaky feeling Dortmund might do something this year. You know?
I'd like that.
I've got a sneaky feeling Dortmund. I don't like win it, but I think Dortmund might be the team that does
it. Something that hasn't been brought up that much is that Ajax, everyone was like, oh, obviously they get picked apart. They lost De Ligt, they lost De Jong, and they lost Lassie Schürrle. And they basically kept everybody else.
No, didn't one of the other attackers go? One of the other, was it?
They lost Kasper Dolberg, but he didn't even play.
No. Wasn't it? Was it Hamsic? Not Hamsic.
No, Ziyech, he stayed.
Ziyech, did he stay? Okay, I thought he was leaving.
And they've brought in Lissandro Martinez, who looks class. They've brought in a couple of others. They're not quite there yet, but they're still playing absolutely wonderful football. I think it'd be mad to write off Ajax early doors. I think they're really, really good side again still. So there you are. Hopefully we'll have two fairy tales.
The last two times that Valencia have been in Chelsea's group, we've got to the final, so I've just got to put that out.
What?
What does that mean?
What a stat. So, are you Group G?
I can't remember what the letter is, but we're in Ajax's group.
Group G, I think there's never been a winner from Group G.
No, they're not in Group G.
Okay, you're right then. You're back on.
They're in Group H. It's not an easy group, though.
We've got Tammy Drogba as well.
Wow, that's the headline of the podcast. We've got Tammy Drogba. Wow. Oh, dear. Okay, finally, speaking of Tammy Drogba, G, am I? Is he going to win the Golden Boot this year? What's your boy trying to do? Trying to end my career?
He's not gonna win the Golden Boot, but he's definitely gonna prove you wrong and prove a lot of people wrong, including myself. I think it was a fair question to ask whether he could convert what he was doing in the Championship to Premier League. But so far he's done really well. But there's been some people criticizing, mainly you, who just went well overboard. And I'm glad that he's kind of put a few of those people
wrong. But hang on, has he proved people like me wrong, or is it a purple patch? Are you seeing goals that he's scoring and thinking, this isn't just form? He's showing that his movement's good, his finishing is good. You're seeing things that you think he can maintain over the course of the season.
I'm looking at it and he's scoring almost every type of goal. You know, he's getting the header goals, he's getting the scrappy goals, he's getting the good finishes, he's getting those quick finishes that the keepers don't have time to adjust their feet. He looks like the all-round package. It could be a purple patch, but I'm going to talk him up because he might not score another goal towards the end of the season.
Let's hope so.
But, you know, strike while the iron's hot while he's there.
Pick him up.
No, and like I said, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, the comparison to Drogba, there's a few memes over the weekend about Tammy and Drogba and stuff. Yeah, it's very early, but then if you said Drogba after four games at 24 when he first came in, and you said Tammy after four games at 21, Tammy start on those bases. I know it's a reach,
though, four games. Like,
it's a serious reach.
But it's a brighter start.
Federico Makeda after four games. You know, won United the title, scored three goals
in his
first four.
Yeah, but we're not worried
about
United.
Right.
We know United don't produce players anymore.
Ruin them sometimes.
I saw Tammy 3 years back at Bristol City against Fulham, and he took us to pieces at the Cottage. Absolutely tore us apart. And it was a decent Fulham side, and he was 18 then, maybe 19. And he was good then, and he was good for Villa last year.
Do you rate him?
I think I don't think he's going to be a top scorer, you know, Golden Boot kind of player.
I'm just trying to provoke
you. I think he's a solid player. Like, I think he'll score goals. He'll score, you know, 10, 15 in that kind of region this season, and he'll be fine.
And he's got time to get better.
Oh yeah,
this is the thing. It's like, why does everyone have to judge him as if like, you know, this is the finished article? He can still go on. Like, if you'll see people talk about Rashford and say, oh yeah, he's still a young player, It's kind of like Tammy, it was kind of like his obituary was written before the season started with some people.
I think Tammy's two goals off or three goals off Rashford's best ever season in the Premier League, and it's September, so that's probably a good sign.
Fadouma, finally, do you think this time next year he will be in the England squad for the Euros?
It'll be a tough one to tell. I don't think so, just because Kane is like the golden boy, and it's like...
No, but in the squad, do you think he'll make the squad?
I think he'll make the squad, but I don't think he'll have much playing time. And I think if that's what ultimately he wants, a lot of playing time, I don't think he'll get that in England. Not for a couple of years at least, but I think he'll make the squad.
If he chooses, obviously, England, as we discussed earlier on. Look, I've got nothing against the boy.
What?
It's not personal. I just don't rate him.
You know what? Josh should come in here and do, put little clips together of what you said about him.
I just don't rate him. But boy, he's doing his thing.
But you were impressed by the third goal.
I thought the first and the third goal were really, really good goals. Okay. So I was like, you know, I'm not ignorant. I'm not, but, you know, stubborn. Like I said, I can hold my hands up and see a good goal and appreciate. But I just don't rate him.
But what is it that you don't rate?
I see a guy that just looks gangly.
I think these are the assumptions you made at the beginning. You're too stubborn to go back.
Let's talk in a few games' time. We'll see.
Don't worry. When he bangs a hat trick at the Emirates, when you're talking.
Oh, wow.
If he does that, then yeah, it's
then
a wrap.
Then he's going to be back that week.
G ain't coming ever back after that happens. Listen, guys, should you come on the pod this week, G, Fadouma and Jack. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We're on Twitter. We are on all the socials. We're on iTunes as well as Spotify as well. Until next week, peace.